Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Wait, did you say you're at your mum's?
Yeah, because I've left London and I've gone back to my mum's.
Where's your mum live?
Portsmouth.
Oh, you're back in Portsmouth then. So you've left to work from home from London to Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Are you missing her?
No, not really. I'm quite happy to be here, to be honest. Like, solo rides in London. So I live in like Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
It's like 20 minutes out to Kent or whatever. So here it's like 2 minutes and I'm in the South Downs.
So. Yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice. I am still in London and still in my little flat in East London, which is really quite quiet.
Have you still been solo ride? Have you been solo riding then?
Not really. I'm mainly riding inside. Like I've basically ridden if I've gone like to the, you know, to the shops basically, and that's kind of it. To be perfectly honest with you, I haven't really wanted to do. I don't think it's right to ride outside right now in the current situation, even if it is on your own. So I'm just riding, like trying to keep it to a minimum as much as I can.
Yeah,
and it's on my own. And as far away from any other human beings I can possibly do.
Yeah. And are you training?
Loosely training. So it's tricky because all of my like events and stuff that I kind of have planned for this year.
Yeah.
I've been basically all the races I've planned up until October now have been cancelled.
Yeah.
So, which is the right decision, but equally quite frustrating. I just wanted to say, the reason why I asked you to say where you were again is because I pressed start on the record.
Yeah. No, I got that. it showed me on the thing and I was like, oh, my God, we started.
Oh, does it come up saying that it started to record?
Yeah. Like I can see, on the webpage.
Ah, good. So, anyway, this will be episode shit. That's a really good question. So I'm just going to start. We've had our little chat. I like to record them, start recording when people don't realize. I just think it's much more fun.
No, it's not. It gets like it feels more organic, you know?
Exactly. This will be episode, let me think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think, or 7. I can't remember. I'll figure it out when I have to upload it. It's 6 or 7. I think it's 6. And so, is it 6? Yeah, it is 6. So, episode 4 is an episode with Joe Laverick, which I actually put live tonight. So for everyone's reference, it is currently Friday, the 27th of March at 7:30 in the evening. Joe Laverick's episode I actually planned to put live tomorrow, Saturday, but I decided to put it live tonight because I can, basically. And then...
Well, how's the feedback been from the podcast so far?
Feedback's been really, really good. It's like I've wanted to do one for a long time. And the reason why I've wanted to do one is because I listen to loads of podcasts. It's just been something I like to do. And I'm very privileged to have met and worked with and been involved with some really incredible people. And I'm kind of using it as a way to showcase and share some of those kind of stories. So,
do you listen to any other cycling podcasts?
I do listen to a few, I listen to more training focused podcasts than general chit chat podcasts.
I know the one.
Oh, there's one, isn't there? We could say it's Trainer Road. I love it.
I don't know what the deal is, but yeah.
So the reason why this podcast has existed, so as I say, it's Friday the 27th at like 7:30 in the evening. This is Tom on the other end of the line.
Hello.
I basically texted Tom about 5 minutes ago saying, hey, mate, what are you up to? I've got some new equipment I really want to try out. Do you want to do a podcast? That's pretty much how it went. But Tom, I mean, we'll get to know a bit about Tom over the next hour or so anyway. But yeah, as I say, the episode four will have just gone live, which is the episode with Joe Laverick. So Joe is a young British cyclist. Raced at the World Champs 2018 in the TT. He's a really legit good time trialist and has just signed up for the Agi Tour Allemand development team. And then episode five, which is quite
a real deal.
Yeah, Tom, he is a really good bike rider.
I don't know why I've come to. I'm not a serious bike rider like this guy is. This is.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy, Joe. So Joe's podcast has just gone live now, which it's a really nice one, actually. He's young, he's 19, so it's really, really nice. Have a listen to it when if you get a chance. But episode five, which I think is probably one that's quite an interesting one, is I actually got a very good friend of mine, Stefano, who runs a podcast called Broom Wagon. I got Stefano to interview me.
Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting. It gets quite deep. And I asked Stefano to interview me because Stefano, we're good friends. He lives in Zurich. We're good friends. And we'd never actually met for a very long time. And then we actually met at the Atlas Mountain race. And he kind of was the person that pushed me to finally make the leap and decide to do a podcast. I've been chatting about wanting to do one for a long time, and then he was just sort of like, yeah, you should fucking do it, basically.
Did you actually ride with like alongside people for quite a lot of that race, or is it like mostly on your own?
In the first day I was in the lead group, you're in a group of like 30 riders. It's fast, it's brutal. My first day, I think my TSS on that day, training stress, was 570.
Yeah, which is massive.
Yeah, that's called trying to hold on to Christian Meyer and James Hayden's wheels. Like, but then as the race progressed, you sort of bumped into people here and there, and you'd just ride along for a bit next to each other and chat, and then, you know, someone would stop, or a puncher or mechanical or whatever, and you just carry on. It was good fun. But yeah, so Stefano interviewed me for episode five, which was, I asked him to do it because he's a good friend and I trust him. And also I trusted that he would ask questions. Hello, doorbell.
All right. you can edit that bit out if you want, but our doorbell just has a thing of like, it just goes off when it wants to.
No, I'm not editing that out. That's staying in.
There's obviously no one at my door.
Are you sure?
100%.
Have you checked?
I'm not going to check.
Okay, get your mum to check. Mum! Mum, someone's at the door!
Don't encourage it.
I got Stefano to interview me, and I think I actually was very hesitant about sharing it because it's quite personable. It's quite a personable podcast where he asks a lot of questions that I don't think a lot of people have actually asked before. It gets quite deep, actually, but it's a really nice. I've decided to share. I've put it in the interweb world to be shared. But yeah, it was quite a personable one, and I was quite concerned about sharing it at first. But yeah. Fuck it, you know. So then that takes us to where we are now, which is episode six. That's what I said, wasn't it? Six. Yeah.
Yeah,
which is you, Tom, who we've sort of talked about the potential of doing this for a while, and your initial concerns were, when we chatted, was like, oh, I'm a new cyclist, it's not really that interesting, blah blah blah, fish and chips. And I was like, well, that is actually quite interesting, first of all, and secondly, your background as coming from someone in design is very interesting, because this isn't a cycling podcast, this is a podcast that happens to interview cyclists but isn't fundamentally a cycling podcast. As you would have seen in the other episodes where we talk about women's equality, starting businesses. Joe's one is very cycling related.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to just talk to you about life, really.
Yeah,
cool. A bit about everything going on. For me, like, that's where I wanted to go with this. I just wanted to keep it really chill. So it'd be great if you could, like, as though we met, how the fuck did we first meet? We met just in London, didn't we?
So I've been a massive fan of Chris Hall from the Francis K's, all the Attica stuff from like the beginning. So I don't know. Yeah. Probably like messaged you once or twice, and then we met up to do some photos, for like the Atticus things.
Yeah.
Oh, we went on an Atticus ride before that, I think. And maybe said hello then or something like that. But
yeah. I think we went on the ride with Jimmy and Emily and all those crazy mannequins.
Those good guys.
Yeah, I miss them. We can leave it as a silence there. I need to like get a little violin sound. I miss Jimmy and Emily. And and also you happen to have worked on a project that I really, really respect in Amsterdam, because I think it's very, very cool.
Yeah, that was. Do you want me to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it was a kind of, you know, it wasn't. It was just a coincidence, really, that the project came through at the company that I was working at, but a store in Amsterdam called Rideout came to the agency, and they said what they wanted to do, and my agency made one good decision, and they were like, we'll put the cyclist on the project that involves cycling. And then as soon as I saw the brief, I was like, well, yes, give me all of this. Didn't have like loads of time to work on it. It wasn't a huge client, but I managed to get some kind of like fairly cool stuff done. And the outcome, like the store, by the time they'd finished, you've seen it, Chris, haven't you? I thought it was like, for a bike shop, it was like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is a very, very cool project. And like, I'm more than happy to talk about it. Like, it's called Ride Out in Amsterdam. It's in the old Citroën factory, if I'm correct, or Citroën garage, which is right next to
the Olympic, something to do with the Olympic broadcast house or something like that. Or is that completely wrong?
Well, I believe it was a car. I mean, you, to be honest, you worked on a project. I'm only saying, you're probably right. I'm only saying from what I like was told was that at some point it was a Citroën car garage.
Yeah.
And then it was used somehow for the Olympics because it's right next to the Olympic stadium.
Yeah.
And the project is, part of it is a bike shop. Part of it is like basically a car showroom.
Yeah, it's a bit of like a concept store for bikes, showing off like some of the cool brands that the parent company Pon own in Amsterdam. And it's part of like a bigger headquarters. So it's not your kind of average run-of-the-mill selling bikes. It's a lot more about showing off all the cool new things and technologies that they're using and things like that. So
yeah, so what was your what just so everyone knows, what was your background in that project? What did you do in the project?
Right, so the company that I worked for did sort of like 3D interiors for retail, but I'm like a 2D branding designer, so I did sort of like the logo and then all the in-store comms and the kind of branding for the store, which is really cool because they put on a load of t-shirts and a load of tote bags, and like they've taken it like way further than what I did with it to begin with. So it's really cool watching it kind of come to life.
They put it on jumpers as well. I've got one of those jumpers.
Yeah. I had a hat at one point, but I left it in a pub and I went back for it and they didn't have it. So sorry about that.
What was that, one of the beanies?
It was, yeah.
What colour did you have?
But it was quite nice.
Yeah, it was nice. I've got one somewhere. What colour did you go for?
Black, obviously.
I think I went for the yellow one.
Did you?
Yeah, I think so. I honestly couldn't tell you. I'm not really a beanie person, but I was given one and I was like, yep, yeah, cool. It's free. I love one.
Yeah, no, they were really nice. And like, yeah. Anyway, they did some cool things with the brand, which I was super chuffed with. Because if you work in design, you'll know that once you've kind of like handed over your final deliverables, kind of that's it, like downhill it goes.
Yeah, I saw something really interesting the other day. Sorry, my mum's sending me photos of my cat. Yeah. Why is she distracting me? I saw something the other day which made me laugh, and it was talking about design and working in design, and it's talking about clients specifically, and it was saying, like, basically said, we design it, £100.
Oh yeah.
And then it was like, we design it with your advice, £500. You design it with our advice, grand. You design it, £5,000.
Yeah.
Which is very, very much in keeping on design, isn't it?
Yeah. And people may not know, but you actually also worked in design as well. I'm sure people probably actually do know this.
But... yeah, I've covered it a little bit on some previous episodes of this podcast, but I don't really talk about it that much because it was quite a while ago now, to be honest with you.
It's what brought you to London, though, in the first place, I would imagine, though, no?
Yeah, it was what brought me to London originally. I studied in London. I studied at Ravensbourne, which is a creative university, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't even know they call themselves a university. We creative institution, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's right next to the Millennium Dome. When I studied there, it used to be in Chislehurst. So just outside London, I did my first year in Chislehurst, and then I did my second and third year in the new site, which is the one next to the Millennium Dome or the O2, whatever you want to call it. And I studied architecture. So
were you riding a bike at all back then, even as like a commuter or a town bike or anything like that?
Yeah. So for me, it was I basically was commuting between where I lived in Greenwich. I lived like sort of nearer to the old town. Do you call it town? The old part of Greenwich.
Yeah.
And I used to commute on a bike that was four sizes too big for me. It was a red Specialized LA. It was horrible.
You had an LA?
I had a Specialized LA, a bright red one. I hate color red.
I feel like that's kind of like a rite of passage, that bike, isn't it?
Yeah. It was, I mean, I say I hated it. I mean, the main reason I hated it was because it didn't fit me and it was red.
You don't like red bikes. Is that right?
I don't like the color red, and I don't like bikes that are too big as well. So for me, it was, I used that bike though to get between university and home, basically locked it up outside.
Is that because you hated public transport like the rest of us?
I can't stand public transport, mate. I feel like it's an invasion of personal space being on any form of public transport. And I appreciate that some people only have that way to get to and from work and things, but I fucking hate it. Like, it just seems grim.
It was funny listening to, I listened to your podcast the other day with George, and he said that he jumped on a bike because he was just so sick of getting the tube. And it's like, it's exactly the same story for me as well. I just hated it so much.
So that's how you started cycling, was it? Was it when you moved to London for work?
No, so I was in London for probably about 2.5 years, maybe 3 years of getting the tube before I was like, this is so rubbish. I hate this so much. and then someone offered me like an old bike, and it was like, it was heavy aluminium. Like, I didn't realize how uncomfortable it was at the time.
Yeah.
It was horrific. And yeah, it started with that, really. Even riding that to and from work, and I was riding from Walthamstow to Paddington, which is, if anyone knows, like Finsbury Park, Holloway, it's just like a huge main road, and I just rode down that, and it was horrible. But it was still better for me back then than getting the tube. So, yeah, that's how it kicked off, really.
So what was that bike? Can you remember what it was?
It was the sort of thing you probably get from like Halfords, like a rally or something.
Yeah.
I think something like that. And it had, it was given to me with like sort of chunkier, maybe like 30 mil tires that were kind of like hybrid. You know what I mean? Like those kind of bikes are.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then I put 25 mil tires on it because I was like, yeah, this is a road bike now. but what I didn't realize, the reason they put 30 mil tires on it is so that it offers at least a marginal level of comfort. And 25 mil tires, yeah, it was pretty tough going, but I only found that out when I actually got a proper bike. So, well, not a proper bike, but you know, like a more expensive road bike. So, which is funny.
And now you're riding on a very lovely Bowman, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, it was. It's not dissimilar to the bike I was riding before, but definitely like a bit more blingy, a bit more like cafe stop eyeballing. Yeah, it's nice.
So what, Bowman, to people that don't know, to explain, are a British based brand based in London.
Yeah, in Brockley, so southeast London. So only about 15 minutes from where I live, actually, which is really cool. Nice.
And yeah. You've got a Palace Disc, is that what it's called?
So I've got the Palace R from 2019, and it's in Neil, the owner of Bowman, he likes to call it the Blorange colour.
Blorange. It's a strong colour, isn't it?
It's like a teal with like orange, I wouldn't even say accents, it's like half teal, half orange. Quite the look, but it's definitely quite catching. Yeah, and plus nice. I think you'll agree with me on this, Chris, but black bikes, I see a lot of them, and for me, like, I think I'd rather have something a bit unique.
Depends on the black bike though.
Oh okay.
Yeah, because
you've got those black, you had those black Cervelos in the past, haven't you?
I still got those black Cervelos, my friend.
Oh, okay.
I think the S5 that I've got is an absolute, like, that for me in black with white logos was always the best looking black bike you could ever own.
Pretty cool. Pretty rad.
And I still have it, and I still love it. Yeah. And I've got an R3 disc, which is black and white, which looks pretty badass, which is the one that I was out on Calpe on. And that's my black bike section. That's it.
But then when you had the chance to do your 24-hour TT bike.
Yeah, I went a bit nuts with that.
Were you thinking, I'm going to go matte black on this one?
Well, the thing is, I think so often with time trial bikes, they are almost always black.
Yeah.
And my 24-hour TT bike that I raced on last year is bright pink, because
that's a bit of an understatement, really, isn't it? Bright, it's a whole sort of concoction of purples and pinks and sort of weird patterns going on.
Yeah, well, it's three shades of purple / pink that fade into each other, and then some crazy patterns. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Did you design that yourself as well?
I designed that with another guy called Hansi in the Robots, I think is his Instagram handle, something like that. Hansi in the Robots.
Yeah.
And then in collaboration with the guys who run the Windy Miller paint studio, which is Sammy and Luke. Basically, between the four of us, we sort of thrashed out that design.
Yeah. How do you even start? Like, because I'm trying to think, like, if I wanted to design a bike now,
yeah,
like maybe I'd have like a few ideas in my head, like, oh, fades are cool, like that sort of thing. But where did you start, like, with that process?
So I think what's really important with bikes and bike design is simplicity. Often is the better way to go than overcomplexity.
Yeah.
So I've been quite lucky to have designed quite a few bikes in my time. Like, I own quite a few bikes. Obviously, I'm sponsored by Cervelo, but I also over the years have acquired quite a few different bikes. And I'm literally, four of the ones which are hanging on the wall right now, all four of them are custom painted, and all four of them are ones I designed the paint job on. And they are all very beautiful bikes. Like, there's no denying it. I've ridden them across countries and things. One of them is the bike that I did 107/107 on, which is now basically the whole theme of that was space. It's very glittery and like color fades and flips and stuff like that. But the same with that one. That's quite a bold paint job. But
did that come from?
Pardon?
Where did the space theme come from?
I just fucking like space. I think it's amazing. I think space is incredible. Like, I'm fascinated by space. And my dad is a massive Star Trek fan. So that's probably where that one came from.
Yeah.
And then one of them is like a marbled purple and gold. One of them is a really dark blue to purple fade. And then one of them, which is the bike I rode across Australia on, is like a glittery black and then a matte gray, which is reflective. So there's like a real sort of mix of different techniques and patterns there. Fades are obviously very big in the bike world, but also, and so fades, and they're not easy to do. A fade is not an easy thing to do. It does take a lot of process to make a fade look good, because a fade, to be a good fade, should look seamless, if that makes sense. You shouldn't be able to really tell where one color starts and the next ends. That's hard. That's very hard to do, and takes a lot of mastery and skill to do that. And the guys that, like, I've had my bikes so there's three different painters who have painted the four bikes that are hanging on the wall. So two of them are painted by Custom Flow, which is a paint company based up north. Tommy did those ones. One is painted by Cole Coatings, and one is painted by Windy Miller Paintworks. And all of them are flawless. So if you are looking to get a bike repainted, I can't rate those guys more highly. They've all done incredible jobs.
I've only heard good things about all those paint, like, what would they call them? Painters?
Painters, yeah. Gunners, whatever you want to call them.
What outside of your own, do you have a favorite bike color scheme going on that you've seen sort of out in the world, either like in the pro world tour teams or like just
that's an easy one. I can answer that so quickly.
Oh really?
Yeah. The my favorite paint job that's in the world tour that I've ever seen, and you can take this as bias if you want. I am sponsored by Cervelo, so you could take this as being biased or not. When they released the R5 a couple of years ago, they released it with like a wrap on it, and it was like a digital camo pattern wrap, and it was so fucking cool. And I literally to this day regret the fact that I never bought one, and I spend I could show you emails from about a month ago where I've been contacting bike shops in America to see if they have a size 54 in stock, because it's fucking rad. It's just really cool. So it's like a digital camo, black and white pattern.
Yeah.
and they basically wrapped the frames before Flanders and Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah.
The idea of using like digital camera, it's used in car, in automotive design, is you wrap the cars to help to try and blur out where any of the bends and shapes are in the body of the car. It was the same similar to reason why it was originally used in like battleships, was to kind of blur and differentiate the crossover points between the boat and the sea, so it made it harder to target. So they then did it in automotive design to kind of, so you couldn't, if you saw the cars being tested on the road, you couldn't necessarily tell what the car was. Anyway, Cervelo then did it with the R5 and the R5 disc when they released that, which was released at the Classics, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, maybe. But it had like bright fluoro green Cervelo logo.
Yeah. I'm looking at a photo of it now.
Fucking awesome. So cool. And that at that point was a very, that at that point for Cervelo, who I believed at that point were quite a conservative bike brand.
Yeah.
Quite a bold thing to do. And it's been like since then, they've kind of done these odd, like really bold, spectacular ones, like the Cavendish S5s they did. They did two different versions that were like chrome and green, and they were nuts. But then equally, like you have to look at on the other, I think it was Nibali's S-Works Tarmac that won the Giro 1 year, that was chrome. It was a chrome pink. That was pretty stunning. It's quite a few years back now. But yeah, it was a Tarmac that was a, and it was when he was on Astana, and it was chrome pink. That was pretty bonkers. I've got to be honest, I've never been particularly fussed on the Sagan paint jobs. I always think they're otherwise too bold or too boring. There doesn't seem to be
a half and half one recently, didn't they?
Yeah, they did a half and half one, which that was kind of cool, but they did that for Sagan for the Tour, and they did it for, I think it was Pascal Ackermann for the Giro as well. But because they basically did the same thing, I was just a bit like, meh. some of the, with the current like crop of standard issue World Tour bikes that are out there at the moment, do I like any of them? I'm not that fussed on any of them, I don't think. I don't think any of them particularly stand out to me this year for the current, this year's World Tour, in the men's and women's races, that is.
Yeah. Although I do like the women's Canyon bikes. I think Rafa have done a very nice job with the paint jobs on those.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like the fact they're free. I think I prefer the older ones, the previous generation colours.
Yeah, true.
But I thought that of the... I'm sure it's just because it's new and I'm a bit like, ooh. But yeah, I'm not... I think they look fantastic, but I think there's the potential that they could look... I don't know, maybe I just preferred the old ones, but yeah.
Yeah, they didn't exactly change much, did they, to be fair?
No. It's a slight colour changes, basically, in the kit, wasn't it?
But I did look at the design for that, and they had... Do you know the guy who did... So the... Those kind of like, I don't know what you call them, like slashes that are essentially form the patterns.
Yeah.
They are done by like a comic book artist or something like this.
In the new one?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the connection being that the women in the team were like, you know, superheroes or something to that effect. And then
that's nice.
The link was that they had a comic artist do the pattern, which I thought was quite nice, actually.
Yeah, that is nice. I didn't know that. I know the previous generation kit, or effectively the previous two, because they did the first generation of it, and then they did a colour tweak of it for like maybe a year or so later. And that was basically done by wrapping like emergency tape around a mannequin.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And that's how they created the patterns on that. Those be like the previous one. Was just where the pattern of the emergency tape, you know, like the red and white, like checkered tape.
Yeah.
Where the pattern like crossed over. That's how they created the patterns on that kit. And I thought that was an absolutely genius way of designing a bit of kit that. Like, it's just doing something completely out of the spectrum of what people would class as normality and just going with it. But I mean, of kit of this season, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's talk kit.
All right.
I need to look at them to really understand it, because I think there's probably a lot of kits out there that, where are we? Let's get on my phone instead of going on my laptop.
I feel like pro teams kits are just like, they're just not that cool at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's maybe one or two that are kind of cool because they're like, they reference like a more, like a historic version of the kit or something like that. But yeah, compared to like the design of like football teams, jerseys, t-shirts.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say that they're pretty boring. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm going to Google some now as well.
So Adjetu Alamon is the brown with the white and then blue and then brown bibs. It's just, I don't like it, but it's very classic then. Astana, light blue jersey, black bibs. Same. Oh, I just think
it's
quite boring. Not fussed on Astana. Bahrain McLaren I quite like.
Okay, I'll give... Yeah. Bahrain McLaren.
So that's the red, like the dark orange / red shoulder and then an orange body, which is the McLaren colour.
So and they rebranded. Well, I'm sure all of them like rebrand for each year, but this was quite a big rebrand.
And yeah, it was a complete change of the team name.
Yeah, and they brought in the because they were Katusha. They're Katusha.
No, they weren't. They used to be Bahrain Merida.
Oh, sorry. You can cut that bit out. Like, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I hate bikes.
I'm sure I saw somewhere that who did the new logo. But yeah, kind of cool. A bit more like, a bit more conceptual, a bit more like of a design gone into it.
Yeah, it's a bit more interesting, isn't it? Same thing covered in sponsors.
Yeah, at least the sponsors are black though. Like they don't have like colours on them.
Yeah, they've kept it in keeping. The next one that I can see in front of me, Bora Hansgrohe. They haven't actually changed the design in a year. So, yeah, don't even really engage with that. CCC, haven't changed the design, maybe changed the sponsors slightly on it. So it's the orange jersey with the black bibs with a black fade on the jersey. Confidis, that's probably one of the ugliest ones. I just think that's actually rancid. Red bibs, red shoulders, white body.
Minging,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's just boring. And the Quick Step kit this year, which the thing is, I tell you what, Quick Step have nailed it here. They're not even the title sponsor anymore, and everyone still calls them Quick Step. Because the other sponsor's so hard to bloody say the name off, isn't it?
Yeah. like De Kerning Lidl.
De Kerning Lidl, yeah. But I really don't like the kit this year, the Deceuninck Quickstep one.
See, but people really rave about this kit, though, don't they?
Do they? Not the people I talk to.
I don't know. I thought the general vibe I got was that this was like, oh, Deceuninck Quickstep classic kit, really smart. Like, I don't get it. It's just like a blue jersey with a white bar across. I don't know. To be honest, Chris, like, I'm coming in this from like, you know, I didn't even watch the tour before last year, so.
No, but this is good because you've got a design background, so you're talking about it quite honestly. Like, I think that the EF kit this year, I personally don't like it as much as the previous one.
What have they done this year?
They've done some like checkered, like blue and pink thing. Really cool. It's still really cool. It's just not as nice as last year.
The coolest kit in the peloton still.
Oh yeah. Groupama FDJ. Theirs is really rancid. It doesn't look like it's changed in ages either. Thibaut Pinot can't make that kit look good, even though he looks amazing on a bike.
But to bring this into some context, like, these are sponsors of bike teams that rely on being viewed, right? And being like, kind of like visible on the TV, people wearing their kits, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it would surely it would make sense to like really like invest in the kit design.
Yeah, I think it's a bit different in the UK to Europe. Like in Europe, many people tend to buy the kit of the teams. Like in the UK, we don't tend to do that.
Yeah.
And I think also because we only really have, well, one British team, don't we, really, that people kind of is at the top end now. And well, so
why don't we wear like team kit over here?
I don't know. I don't really know. I think it's a snobby thing, to be honest with you, because I think personally, I think if you like the kit, buy it and wear it. And also, if you want to support the team, great. It doesn't matter that it's Ineos or Quickstep, whoever it is, just fucking buy it and wear it. Like, I think we've seen a lot more people buying the EF kit than probably Ineos because it's cool at the end of the day. You look at like Israel Startup Nation, their kit's boring as fuck. You look at Lotto Sudal, the kit is dull. Mitchelton Scott, I think, is pretty dull. Movistar, don't like it. NTT, I quite like it, but it basically looks like the old Team Sky kit.
Sorry, NTT.
Yeah. Ineos, looks like the NTT kit now, but red, you know.
Yeah, the fade. The fade is in.
Yeah. Jumbo Visma, pretty boring as well. Sunweb. Just lots of sponsors on it, but at least they're all white. And so there's a consistency there. Like you've kept all the sponsor logos in white. I kind of appreciate it when teams do that.
Yeah.
Trek Segafredo. The men's kit I quite like. It's quite classic. The women's kit I actually really like. The Trek Segafredo team. Like the women's kit is a bit more bold and a bit more interesting. And the men's team kit looks a bit more like quite old school, actually. UAE. Well, I'm not even going to get started on that kit. What is the Whoosh logo on it? I don't know if you've seen that one. It's got like Whoosh on the tummies. Horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, see, like, I just, you know, there's so much media around these cycle. I mean, like, you just type in UAE cycling into like Google Images and there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of images of this kit. Like, why is it so ugly?
No. You look at, like, I mean, I'm just looking through all the women's team kits, and as I said, Trek Segafredo is one of the ones that stands out to me still. Obviously, we said about the Canyon SRAM kit, but Trek Segafredo's women's team is probably the only one, I think. The LA BTC, I don't even know how to pronounce the full kit name. That's horrible.
Oh, that is really bad, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not a lot of...
It looks like an ice cream. Like a Calippo.
Yeah, but what I do like is that there is now, like, Mitchelton Scott has a women's and men's team. Trek Segafredo has a women's and men's team. Movistar is a women's and men's team. Sunweb is a women's and men's team. I mean, a couple of these teams have been doing this for quite a while, and CCC is another one. But yeah, a couple have been doing it for a while, and I really like there's like a consistency now between having a men's and a women's team. That it just feels like it's something that should have happened a long time ago and just bloody hasn't. I think it's really.
Do you think they should have the same kit as the men's, or do you think they should have their own kit as well?
I don't really mind, to be honest with you. It can be either way.
My preference, to be honest. I was just interested to.
I really like that the Trek's women, like, because Sunweb, the men's and women have the same kit. And I don't mind that kit. I think it looks quite good. But then you look at Trek Segafredo, the men's and women have different kit. And equally, I think both the men's and women's kit look great. So I'm kind of fine. What's their name? Parkhouse Valkenburg. Their kit is pretty strong. I like their kit. It's like a black bibs with like a dark green, pink, and like peachy, like chevron on it, and then a white top. Yeah. I think that's really smart. It's nice colours.
It's a white jersey, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's kind of done well.
I'm into the white jersey.
Mm. I wore a white jersey in Morocco. It got absolutely.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
That was a.
Late? Dare I ask?
Sorry, I missed that bit.
I says it's still white.
No. So, the funny bit about that kit is that all came up as a bit of a dare from Jimmy. He was like, can I send you a white jersey for you to wear at Atlas Mountains? And I said, yeah, of course you can. I don't know if I'll wear it, but cool, yeah, whatever. And then I saw he was like, go on a day to wear it. And I was like, okay, I'll wear a white jersey on a gravel race where it's 95% gravel and sand for 1,450 kilometers. This is going to go well. And so I did. I wore it, and then I posted it back to Jimmy in its filthy state.
I'm sure he really appreciated that.
Well, he asked for me to post it back, so I thought, why the hell not? Anyway, I'm going to ask you a few bits. So, what's your plan this year? What are you going to do? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on with the coronavirus, which is massively limiting anything we can do. But
into this chat, and we haven't spoken about it once.
I know.
It's quite impressive. It dawned on me earlier, and I was nearly going to bring it up, but I didn't. But to answer your question, so this year last year was the first time I'd raced my bike.
Yeah.
And although I found it quite stressful and a bit scary, it was a really good experience. And the cycling community is great. The racing cycling community is also just awesome. Like, I met some really cool people through racing my bike. And then getting like, just get, when you start racing a bike, you do really get a new sense of like, I am now quite a bit stronger and I can go much further and much faster. And hills, like, they're no longer, can I make it to the top? They're like, how fast can I get to the top? And it makes cycling so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. So this year was going to be, and was, hard training, sort of just straight out of like Christmas. And I wanted to, Cat 2 was the plan for the end of the year. And Palace was like the A goal for this year, I think.
Palace was a goal for this year. So your target was to
a goal.
Destroy like Palace.
Get a podium at Palace. Crystal Palace, which is a criterium in South London, where I live.
Yeah, nice. Palace is, for people that aren't in London, Palace is probably the London crit scene race to race on. It's very technical, lots of tight corners, but it's the one that everyone wants to go and race on and wants to watch. It's race to go to.
It's so horrible, but it is definitely a kind of, I mean, you can turn up to Hillingdon, you can turn up to Hog Hill, you can turn up to Lee Valley, you can more or less get round. Like, if you're fairly fit and you're racing, you could probably get round. You turn up Crystal Palace, I'm just racing the Cat 3s. Like, it's not even the big time stuff. And so I raced there 5 times last year, mm-hmm. and I finished once.
So it shows how hard it is.
And bearing in mind, I was racing at Hillingdon sort of regularly. Like, I was doing all right, like top 10s pretty much every time.
Yeah.
Like, even in the Cat 3 and stuff like that. So, yeah, a whole nother level. And, like, I was like, this is really hard. I want to do more of this. It's that kind of, like, horrible mentality you have when you're quite competitive, I guess.
Yeah, but that's the best way to be, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you raced Palace?
Nah, fuck that.
No?
I don't really do. I'm not a big fan of crits anyway. I very rarely do crits.
You have raced a bit back in the day.
I have raced a bit. I've done crits. I just, I've had some very nasty crashes in crits, and it threw me off quite a lot. And that's kind of, I might do one again. I don't know. I go through phases where I do like 10 and then I don't do any. But I had a couple of very nasty crashes in crits, and it properly threw me off. And I'm trialing long distance races and cyclocross. Cyclocross is great fun.
They still enjoy a good crash in Atlas Mountains.
Fucking hell. Yeah, I'm still recovering from that, shall we say.
I wonder if you were injured more post crit racing than crit racing.
Have I been injured more post crit racing than crit racing? No, actually. I mean, I had to think about it for quite a while, but no. I've had some bad injuries and crashes and stuff with the long distance races and things I've done, which is the nature of those kind of races, like this. But I have not gone away in an ambulance in a long distance race. Touch wood.
I'm actually
touching wood. My desk is wooden. Yeah, I have been taken away in an ambulance in a crit. So
yeah, I think they. Yeah. Definitely. I'm definitely not going to sort of undersell how kind of real crashing is in crits.
Yeah, it is. It's the nature of it. But hey, that's part of the adrenaline, part of the reason why people enjoy it though at the same time.
And everyone says like, oh, you know, once you get out of Cat 4, there's less crashes. It's less of a sketchy race. Like, all you need to do is look at the World Tour and be like, how many times do they crash every race? Like, There's always crashes like at every level, but yeah, I don't know what to say about that. Just one of the things of it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So what? So unfortunately, the racing side of it, things now are very much quietened down here in the UK and well internationally. I think you know the Olympics has been rescheduled now for 2021.
Yeah,
pretty much every kind of major sporting event has been cancelled up until at least mid to end of summer now in the Northern Hemisphere, and probably will go further on. As I said, one of my races that I've entered, which I can talk about now because it's been cancelled, was the Trans Pyrenees, and that's in October, and that was cancelled. It's definitely the right reason that they've been cancelled, but equally, it's like, fuck, that alters a lot of stuff. And, you know, juggle means there's this whole juggle about working out what to do and what to train for and all that kind of stuff and keeping your own motivation high, which is really hard. Something I personally have struggled with is keeping motivation over the last couple of weeks. I've basically been baking cookies and eating cookies, but there's nothing wrong with that. Like I had a big wobble about it, and I actually talked about it on Social Bollocks the other day.
Yeah.
I got really, really stressed out about it, that I was like, fuck, like, you know, I think people don't realize the amount of additional work that goes into like working with sponsors. Like someone asked me actually to do a whole podcast with it, and I probably will at some point. But their work that goes into like sponsor relationships and starting those relationships and growing those relationships and also keeping them up and running.
Yeah.
In the current climate we're in, that's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, you sort of propose that you're working together and you're doing a series of races or events. Can't do it. And so I had a real stress out the other day. Like I was really, really stressed out. Panicking because like my plans for 2020 were being cancelled or, you know, changed or adjusted, or the one big plan that me and you have been discussing that I was planning to do this year is probably completely off. Yeah. Still not going to talk about it because you never know.
Fingers crossed. And
fingers crossed, exactly. And so anyway, I called up my coach. I'm very lucky to work with an amazing coach who's also happens to be one of my closest friends. So I know he's always got my back when I'm having a shitter. And I called him up just to have a bit of a chat and a bit of a vent. And he put it very bluntly to me. And he said, Chris, you know, you really haven't had an off season in probably 2 or 3 years. So use this as a bit of an off season and let your hair down and relax a bit, because you probably need it more than you realize.
Yeah.
And I was like, that bastard's talking complete sense for once. And I hate to admit how much sense he's talking, but he's talking sense. And
yeah. Do you get that feeling like if you stop, you'll never get like back to where you are now?
Massively so. And I'm not fit at the moment. Like I'm not fit because I've been recovering from a herniated disc in my back.
Yeah.
So my base fitness is not strong at the moment. Like I've dropped my FTP on purpose in all my training by 20 watts, which sounds a lot, but it's actually, you can get 20 watts back very quickly.
Yeah.
Well, but I've dropped it down. Yeah, you can get 20 watts back pretty quick. If you've been to that your previous FTP, you can get it back pretty quick.
Yeah.
So we dropped it down just to make the training load a bit easier on me while my back recovers. A herniated disc is fucking painful. I don't think people really understand how fucking painful that is unless you've had it. It's crippling. To the point that it hurts to walk. And at the end of the, when I pulled out of the Atlas Mountain race, the reason why I pulled out is because I couldn't stand because of my back. So it's probably a good reason to not carry on. So
kind of like, I have no idea what it's like to have a herniated disc. What's the kind of like recovery time for something like that, or does it never really recover, or like
it can take years. The only real ways you can sort of help with the recovery of that kind of thing is building your back strength up, continual massages. I've known people that have had like steroid injections in their spine to help with it as well. Yeah. It's not something I'm particularly looking into right now. It's not something I particularly want to do. But yeah, there's lots of the biggest thing for me is, so I laid out a series of goals to give myself on this time where we're on lockdown. One of them, realistically, probably starting next week, because this week's been a bit all up in the air. But for me, one of them was to try and ride 6 days a week. I haven't achieved that this week. So far I've ridden, I didn't ride on Wednesday and I didn't ride on Monday. So that's one that needs to be adjusted. I'm going to try and do that from next week.
Why was that a goal for you?
Just because I like to ride, and it's nice to have a bit of sanity, you know.
So for you, like having that goal there.
Yeah, I gave myself four or five goals, and it's just purely to give me something to concentrate on and think about, and to keep me training. One was to ride 6 days a week. One was to make sure I did 20 minutes of core work every like pretty much every day. The idea of doing it every day apart from rest days.
Yeah.
One was to drop down some weight again. And I can't remember this one. Pardon?
And bake 6 cookies.
Nah, don't bake 6, bake 24.
Oh, 20, yeah.
Well, that's why I'm starting next week, because I need to eat the cookies first, you see.
What flavour did you go for?
I did two batches. I did one batch that was Rolos, like Rolo chocolate.
I'm living in a hole, Rolo.
Yeah, Rolos, do you not know what Rolos are?
Oh, I do, yeah, no, sorry, yeah. Continue.
You give your last Rolo away. Those amazing chocolates. Chocolate with caramel in the middle. Those guys.
I know.
Yeah, one was Rolo cookies. And then the other batch was like just chocolate chip. And the other batch was cranberries. So three different batches. And loads of people were like, why the fuck are you putting cranberries in the cookies? And do you know why? Because I fucking like dried cranberries. And I can do what I want because I'm making them. And they were glorious. I've got a couple left. They'll probably be eaten tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like you can really share them, is it?
No, exactly. But yeah, like I think it's very good to give yourself those little goals. especially in the current climate where we're sort of, in lockdown, you know, it gives you something to think about, gives you something to keep you motivated and gives you something to...
Do you write them down? Do you post them on socials? Like, what do you, where do they exist?
Those goals exist on my Training Peaks, and I get a message every Monday saying these are your goals for this week.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's quite useful. So I'm going to...
Strictly training goals then?
They're training goals, yeah. Because I my life runs around Training Peaks, obviously.
I can appreciate that, actually.
not around my day job. It runs around Training Peaks. Yeah, no, it should run around my day job. But right, I'm gonna what I've done on every podcast, and as you've listened to a few, I'm gonna challenge this to you: 5 tips, whatever you want, for everyone listening.
All right. So I knew this was coming.
Yeah.
Like in the back of my head over the last few days, I've been like stressing out. Like, what can I say? Like, what can a 25-year-old wannabe cyclist know about anything? But I guess some of these like apply from like a design point of view, and then transfer over into life. So my first one would be to... if you want to do something and you want to do it well, just like do it badly, like 20, 40, 60 times. And then that 62nd one, that'll be good. Or the 100th one or whatever. You know?
Nice. I think
Lawrence, little plug, Lawrence Carpenter has been posting his YouTube videos and he's just hit 20,000 subscribers. Subscribers. And,
yeah,
you know, his videos look pretty good. Like, you know, and the same thing for Francis K, but like, it's because they've done like hundreds of videos now, like, and their first ones were not that good. So I think like, if you want to do something and you're worried, like you want to do it well, don't worry about the first one being any good. Just do it loads and loads of times. And that definitely applies for design. If you want to do like some cool design, or if you want to be good at design or do good design, just start designing everything. What do you think?
I really like that one.
Yeah.
That's a really good tip. Mate, that's why I'm trying to like bust out as many podcasts as I can at the moment.
Exactly. You know, and these initial ones, you know, this one, it'll be a bit of a throwaway, but later down the line, when you've got like, you know, music in between things and all the sound effects going on and all the new like editing tips and tricks, you know, yeah.
Nah, I sort of said to myself from the start that the big thing with these podcasts was to keep them as unedited and as raw as possible. But that just, all I want is the actual audio quality to be really crisp.
Yeah.
I just want it to be really natural conversations with people. And that's kind of the ethos of it. So fuck all that bollocks. Just want to talk shit and swear loads. That's all it is for me, an excuse to swear shit loads.
number two, I think work to your strengths is something that I've always thought was quite worthwhile. I guess in design, like everyone's got their kind of like their thing, like whether it's like working with type or illustration, or maybe you're much better at getting off the computer, getting hands-on, like making things, use that, you know, definitely try other things, but if you have those skills, like play to those. I mean, in a bike race, if you're good at sprinting, like you pretty much know what your game plan is from the start of the race. So that's number two.
Nice.
Number three, God knows. those are my two. Did I?
Oh, have I defeated you?
I really put two like big effort ones into that. I wonder if there's anything bike related.
There's got to be at least one more. Go on.
On an old rally aluminium bike.
You completely cut out then, so you're going to have to start that whole tip again, mate.
Sorry, that was don't put 25 mil tyres on a heavy old aluminium rally bike.
Noted. I'll remember that when I next get a heavy old aluminium rally bike.
Yeah. Well, you have quite a lot of bikes, so you never know.
There might be one under the sofa somewhere.
You know, you never know what sponsors lying around the corner, you know? See you later, Cervelo.
Please no. God, you got two more. There could be anything. Oh, okay. Jess got completely thrown off by this point. She struggled. That's why I made it five.
That's all right. If you're going to race Palace for the first time, you'll probably get dropped, and that is okay.
Nice. Very good point. Very good point.
If you don't get dropped, I take my hat off to you. You are something else. Tip number five, specifically for people who live in London, and massive plug, get down to Herne Hill Velodrome because they are top people, and it's a good one.
Awesome. Right.
Those last three weren't quite as polished or quite life as the first two, but I think that'll do.
They're still very good tips and very relevant, I think. Cool. That's that's another one. Five
tips, Chris.
Have I got five tips?
Have you had to do it yet?
I'll do it at some point. Did you do it
in your one the other day that you did about you?
No, because I didn't interview me. I got Stefano to do it. I'm sure Stefano's now gonna. So I'm actually gonna do one where I interview Stefano in a couple of weeks because he's a really fascinating guy. He's got an amazing voice as well. So
okay,
that's also, cool. He's really good at podcasts. Like he straight up gets all the plugs in there. He's like, you can listen and subscribe to this podcast and all of your favorite podcast subscribers from Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. And I'm just like, shit, mate, I've never said this in a single one of my podcasts ever.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was like, you can like, you could share, you could subscribe, make sure you leave a comment, share it with your friends, share it with your enemies, share it with everyone you know. And I was like, fuck, mate, you might as well just take over the podcast. he's got a really good podcast, so I'm going to give him a shout out. Again, Broom Wagon. You search for Broom Wagon, that's Stefano's podcast. But yeah, I probably should say that all that stuff I just said, if any of that, yeah, get involved. otherwise, I'm going to call this a wrap and I'm going to cook some dinner because I'm really hungry and it's hot. We've been talking for a solid hour.
That was good. Yeah. What have you got for dinner? Cookies.
Probably cookies. I'll have a look what's in the fridge. I might, yeah, I don't know. Hopefully some food. Wait, have you had dinner?
So, yeah. I guess to answer your question, I didn't really say what I was doing this year as well.
Oh, go on. Hit me.
I'm going to continue to train really, really, really hard. And I'm just going to use it as an extended training period for me to get really, really good.
I like it.
That's the plan.
And that way, you don't have the issue of races getting in the way, which are the things that ruin structured training plans.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, it's the evening. I'm going to have some dinner. You're going to do something else. I don't know what.
I'll probably go to bed, to be honest.
That's completely fair enough. Thank you so much for your time, Tom, and very spontaneous podcast as this one was.
It's been wicked. Thanks so much.
Well, I'm sure we'll do another one at some point. Let's check in with how your year of training goes at the end at some point in a couple of months or something, and we'll see.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris. It's been this is really an honour to be on your podcast, bearing in mind I am Chris Hall number one fan. So
Oh, thank you very much. Anyway. Cheers, dude.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.